It's time for another edition of Dome and Domer, the only podcast for Notre Dame fans by Notre Dame fans. If you're looking for cogent analysis and unbiased opinions backed by careful reporting, you've come to the wrong place. For the next 20 minutes or so, you'll get a fan's perspective on the Fighting Irish without all the normal spin from the so-called professional analysts. It's Dome and Domer. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer.
My name's Mike Brammer. Joining me, Ed Jordanic, also joining us from NDNation.com, Mike Coffey. Ed, I'm going to start with you. After the Wake Forest game, you know, I'd asked, do you think this is a sign of things to come? And you said, let me have another game to figure that one out. So where do you stand now as to the program, or not necessarily the program, but this football team at the moment as they're heading into Stanford?
Well, you know, I tend to be glass half full on these things, and I think this team has given us enough evidence to think that they'll play well Saturday and win. Not sure they'll win going away, but I think there's a chance that they do. I don't think this is a particularly strong Stanford team, so you know, maybe the pressure valve has been released a little bit. Obviously, Miami was a huge letdown. They played tight. They played like they were, you know, that they had. They played like they knew they had to win to get into the championship. They didn't play loose like they had. They didn't sort of do the things that sort of marked the character of the team up to that point in terms of stopping the run and running the ball. So, and then Navy, I think, was just one of those games where you're just trying to survive. You know, sort of your championship dreams are probably down the drain. You've got all the distractions of senior week, and you've got lousy weather. You've got a team that's dangerous, that's difficult to prepare for. And they came away with the win, and the offense started to look like it started getting its groove back in the second half. So I think it's possible that we see a team that looks a lot more like the team that we saw play against USC and North Carolina State than we see the team that played against, you know, towards the end of the Wake game and Miami and Navy. And if that happens, then I think that's really all you could possibly ask. And it's a hell of a season, and you play a quality opponent in a big $4 million bowl game. And, you know, the surest way that this program needs to take another step is to beat a quality opponent, right? To beat a top 10, top five opponent, and beat it outside of Notre Dame Stadium, and beat it you know, straight up, and that happens in Notre Dame's preseason top five going into next year. So I think it's pretty well, yeah, you know, laid out there in front of us. I'll be disappointed. If they don't play well Saturday.
Right, and you know, I think Coffey going into the Navy game, I mean, we kind of knew what we were in for. There's probably two big plays in that game that if it just goes a different way, it doesn't end up the way that it was, which is, you know, a heck of a lot closer than we were hoping for. We were, what, a 22-point favorite going into it. But, you know, that third and 14 where the fullback dive ended up gets the first down. And there was another one where it was third and 7 and we had the guy wrapped up and he's, you know, squirms through, falls forward like Navy always does. But, you know, just two big, huge momentum shifts that I think if we stop them there, we probably take over, get two scores ahead, and then Navy just doesn't have the ability to come back and probably presses it, and we're not in the situation.
Well, that's always the thing with Navy. The secret to beating Navy is to get two scores ahead, because they just are not built to come back from a deficit. They focus on the run, and they, by their nature, use up the clock, and that was their game plan. I watched the season inside thing that Showtime is doing with Navy, because this week was the Notre Dame game, and I was curious to see how things were portrayed, and it didn't surprise me at all to find that they were saying exactly the things that we saw. Navy's game plan was to hang on to the ball as long as possible, limit Notre Dame's possessions, keep the offense off of it, which of course shows when Notre Dame did have the ball, it showed why, because they were most of the time able to move the ball pretty easily. But the thing that I think that those two plays have in common, which disappoints me, is just the opportunity was there and they didn't execute. And I was hoping at this point of the season, with the personnel we've seen and what we've seen them do, that I wouldn't be saying, oh man, that they really needed to execute better, because they've been executing so well all through the year. It was disappointing and a little bit concerning that you're going up against Navy. Like you said, 3rd and 14, and this kid just runs through a hole that I could run through and picks up 17 yards. And I was yelling at the television, as I usually am in those situations. And it was just frustrating because, you know, I was hoping we weren't going to be seeing these things now. And I agree with Ed. There's still, and in fact, he probably read the article that I wrote on the site the other day, because I was saying there's an opportunity here for this season to show true progress. I mean, you can go and win at Stanford, which Brian Kelly's teams have had a tough time doing. You can go to a quality bowl game, put in a quality performance, and win the game. 11-2 would be absolutely incontrovertible evidence that this reboot has had a good effect and needs some more time maybe to take root, and then we see what happens.
Yeah, I think you're right. I guess the only other thing that was kind of disappointing, Ed, was just the way that we had dominated, right, offensively. We're up against Navy. All we got to do is get a couple first downs, and the game is just never in question the rest of the way home. But instead, we go three and out. And I thought I was arguing with Sully about this the other day, but I didn't think it was a good pass at all. I mean, I don't think that was Elise Mack's problem. It was too far out in front of him. I mean, at that point, there's no defender around him. You just got to hit him right in the middle.
Throw it underhand, for God's sake.
Yeah, just let him fall down and get the first down. But instead, he tries to throw it out in front of him, and it's just way too out. You know, it's just too much of a play, right?
Well, you know, I know this is going to be probably – this is probably off base. But the thing that I thought the second half did was that it seemed to me kind of a conscious effort. Chip Long and Brian Kelly, you know, they seem to be coaching this offense in a way that to sort of it is reflective of Kelly's tenure at Notre Dame, where the quarterback really is the straw that stirs the drink. Like, they don't really feel comfortable unless their quarterback is really doing all the right things. And it seemed to me that the second half, they just decided that they were going to continue to have that they were just not going to hand off, that they were going to make Brandon Wimbush either win or lose the game. Now, in the long run, that's terrific in the maturation of a quarterback. And if Notre Dame's going to win a national championship next year, it's going to be because Brandon Wimbush plays spectacularly. But it's risky too, right? I mean, you know, he did play much better in the second half and threw a much better ball. So in a way, you know, in the long run, I think it was the right call because he got some confidence back. I mean, you don't want him, you know. You don't want him finishing this season off completing less than 50% of his passes, losing 2 out of 3 games, and just all around, you know, having his confidence shot. So I don't know. I think Notre Dame got the best of both worlds in that outcome in the second half because, you know, Wimbush sort of won the game with a couple of touchdown passes, and they came away with the victory, and his frame of mind sort of going into the Stanford game is certainly not like that he's got the yips again when it comes to throwing the ball.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about that. Coffee, I would just to echo that, I think, you know, the weird thing is he looked real good in those previous couple drives. I mean, threw some great balls. And then all of a sudden you're watching him and he's just missing guys coming across the field. And it's like he's trying to throw too, almost like he's got no touch whatsoever. It's a little weird because, you know, a couple times you just, hey, nobody's around you. You're in the pocket. You just flip it. The guy's there. He's going to run with it, Stepherson, you know, as he's coming across. But, you know, I think that if you looked at the recipe for what's the obvious win for Notre Dame, it's Wimbush throwing for 60%, completing 60% of his passes, winning the turnover battle, and, you know, rushing the football like we always do. There's just no way anybody's going to stop us.
Well, true. I would
just haven't been able to get there.
Well,
yet.
Yeah, but I certainly understand the Wimbush completing 60% part. I'm not a big fan of the number of attempts it's requiring to get him to that 60%, or at least to get it close. I think the thing about the last couple of games is it seems like Notre Dame's gone away from the game plans that were really, you know, the game plans that were getting them all the success. Now, I don't know whether it's because – now, maybe the running backs are more beat up than Brian Kelly's letting on. And I believe I've said before, he's under no obligation to tell the universe the state of his running backs and give opposing coaches – grist to game plan. Yes.
Well, there's something wrong with Adams. We know.
Yeah, that, right? I mean, just something like that long run he had. It was obvious he was just laboring. I mean, he didn't have the speed that he had. Now, he's never been a quick guy, but he's always had a good motor, and he's always been able to get to the hole, get through it, and then accelerate away from it. This time, he was just kind of boom, 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 boom down the field. And just watching him, I was like, yeah, something is just not right there. I mean, that hopefully they can. Hopefully that's the kind of thing that you can just muscle through the game on Saturday, get a win, and then take 4 weeks just to heal everybody up, and then have the opportunity to see that kind of game plan that we've seen going out to the ball game.
Yeah, no, and I think you're right, but. And it's not so much that he has to throw or complete 60% of his passes, because I think the flip side of that is, well, if he's rushing for 100 yards, that's as good as completing 60% of your passes.
Well, that's the thing that's been so interesting. I mean, they really haven't had too many designed run calls for him, and he really hasn't kept the ball that much on the zone read at all the last several weeks, right? I mean, that...
Well, and that's because of the injury, right? Wouldn't you think that he's – I think his hand is a little bit more hurt than
you think. Yeah, it could be, but I mean
– I mean, he didn't – if you remember in the – Miami game, he was one-handing the snaps from
center.
Yeah,
I remember you said that.
I mean, that tells me that something's not right. I mean, that's pretty risky to do 100 snaps. And it worked out. We didn't fumble one the whole entire game. But the point being is that, and I think, I don't know if you guys remember, Herb Street asked him, hey, what's it like when you switch the ball into the other hand? And he said, I don't know. I haven't done it all week. I mean, that right there tells you, all right, it must be pretty damn painful, because if you can't even switch the ball on your other hand. So, to me, that kind of makes sense that, all right, the last thing we're going to do is have him running the football a bunch of times so he takes a bunch of shots, right?
I mean, well, I have a feeling they really don't have to worry about, you know, keeping guys healthy Saturday, right? I mean, in terms of Wimbush or Adams, or, you know, like you said, there's a month plus recovery time. So I don't think that that they really have to worry too much about sort of protecting anybody in terms of their play calling on, you know, I think we'll see a pretty steady diet of, you know, I can see sort of 8 to 10 sort of Wimbush run plays on Saturday pretty easily. At least I think we should see that, because I think that'll open things up.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think everything's got to come out of the
cup. And by the way, I'm not quite sure we're going to get EQ's little brother to come to Notre Dame, considering that Wimbush almost got him killed on Saturday.
Yeah, that wasn't
I didn't hear that. I didn't hear any of that.
No, I'm just saying it.
His little brother.
Oh, you mean throwing high? Yeah, of course. Yeah,
that was poor. That was just poor.
Yeah, that's
but
just.
But then again,
one of those.
You know, if Wimbush comes out this Saturday and is like, you know, 14 for 21 for 241 yards and two touchdowns, then who knows? I'm not quite sure how much that really factors into things, but I think it does with these really, you know, these big high time, high profile receivers like St. Brown. You know, they base a lot of their decisions on, you know, who's going to be delivering them the ball over there 2-3 years.
I think the pitch right now would be Jerkovic, right? I mean, you got that kid coming in who's a pure pocket – I shouldn't say a pure pocket passer, but he's a pure passer. I mean,
he's a dual threat guy too. Yeah, no, he had a terrific senior year.
He's a dual threat.
He had a terrific senior year.
Probably arguably throws a better ball than Wimbush, but Coffee, before we switch gears, because I do want to switch gears, there's no way we could do this podcast without talking about what the Notre Dame last night. But what's your prediction for Saturday night? Give me a
well, the original prediction I made in our contest was that Stanford was going to win 30-21, but I'm kind of waffling on that at the moment. I'm still going to stay Stanford 27-24.
Okay.
I mean, unless and until because the defense the last 10 quarters has just really been, I mean, yeah, I know they held Navy to less than their numbers and all that stuff, but I'm not seeing the fundamental. I saw so much shoulder tackling last Saturday, which was really frustrating. And given what I've seen the last 10 quarters, I'm not comfortable saying that they're going to shut down Love and them. Of course, his own ankle may shut him down, but unless the defense can come out and convince me they've returned to form, I going to have to say 27-24 Stanford.
Ouch. All right. Ed, where are you falling in this?
Yeah, no, I'll take the other side of that. I think, you know, I think that they've got basically Aquara got the week off. You know, that was not a game that plays to Dalen Hayes' strengths. I think that they'll win the turnover battle and they'll win the game. And, you know, Love being, you know, maybe 75-80% certainly doesn't hurt. And whereas I think, you know, Brennan Scarlett, their backup is pretty serviceable. You know, I think Williams and Jones are better in terms of Notre Dame's other options at running back. So I'll say Notre Dame wins 34-20. I think the defense is actually going to play pretty well. I think they've got something to prove on the road.
That's what I'm thinking is. I think they've got to prove something. It's going to be interesting to see how they respond to all this. So we'll have plenty to talk about after the game, I'm sure. You know, switching gears, Coffee, I think one of the things that you also saw last night, I mean, obviously Notre Dame had a huge big win against Wichita State, a good program. They were missing their leading scorer and rebounder, I think, right?
I don't have to look that up, but it's possible.
Yeah, no, apparently he didn't. I totally forgot about that, but they mentioned it early in the game that he was out and didn't even play. But besides that, I think one of the things you saw, and I don't know if you guys watched any of the interviews afterwards, but Brace got this program in a pretty unique situation. I mean, these guys are having a lot of fun. They play hard, but man, they look like they're having a ton of fun out there.
Well, he prides himself on being he prides himself on being the most laid back coach in the country. Now, I know people who go to practices, and he's certainly not that way at practice and stuff like that. But he keeps things on an even keel. And And for any of you people out there who didn't see the video of a shirtless Mike Bray wearing a lay in the locker room after the game, that is not something you can unsee. That is just that will brand itself.
That was pretty funny.
That will brand itself on your cerebral.
That's
going
to come back to haunt him, by the way. But anyways,
that will be in your cerebral. That will be etched on your retinas for the rest of your life. So just
I think what's interesting,
go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
I was just going to comment really quick that what's interesting, and I think what's going to play out here is you got a program that Bray has built where you do have guys that kind of, you know, come in and they're not playing right away as freshmen, you know. They're not the star of the team right when they get in there. He kind of molds them, and then what you've got is you've got a team that's kind of veteran heavy where they're playing ball together. That's unlike the other big programs.
Well, to be fair, that's Wichita State's formula too. I mean, they're a very
I'm thinking more in terms of, you know, Duke, UNC, right. Kentucky, all these guys. That's not their formula. They don't do that at all. And it's interesting just to see that contrast.
I'd also argue that it's a lot more enjoyable to watch Notre Dame and Wichita State play basketball than it is Duke or North Carolina or Kentucky.
Yeah. Yep,
because it's actual basketball, and it's not.
Yeah,
like
you're
all
less likely to see an incredible athletic play, but you're more likely to see great cutting, passing, picking, boxing out. You're more likely to see, an extra pass. I just really enjoy. You know, I mean, last night's game did look like a Sweet 16 game. I mean, it was a high quality
absolutely.
Game.
I agree.
And the thing of it is, I think, Ed, to your point, I think programs like Wichita State and Notre Dame would benefit the most if the NBA does make an adjustment to their one and done rule, because, you know, all these guys who just show up in college for barely a minute, like who was the kid, the kid who plays for Missouri, who got hurt 2 minutes into the game, but he's still gonna go get drafted. And it's like, I thought, you know, that to me that's absolutely ridiculous. But I think it's a credit to the Notre Dame program in general and Mike Bray in particular that they've been able to excel because they've created that kind of a niche for them, Mike, the way you described it, where guys come in, they're not the five-star one-and-done guys, although they are starting to go after those a little bit now, and they're coming in, they spend a year or two learning, and then when they're experienced, they're old, as Mike Bray likes to say, they come in, they contribute, and Marty Gevin is a perfect example of that. Didn't play much the first 2 years. He benefited incredibly from his summer with the Lithuanian national team. He's come back a different player, which is tremendous. And it's because what they've been missing the last couple of years is true size in the post. They've been playing like four guards around a stretch four, and that's like against some teams that's not going to get it done. But now that you've got guys like Gebben and Mooney who's starting to come into his own, that's really going to be
Burns had some good minutes last night,
he
too.
Did.
He didn't do anything statistically.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other thing is you got to give Bray and his staff credit for is, you know, it's not just the fact that these guys get older. It's that they see something in them as 17, 18-year-olds that, in other words, they can project forward what sort of a player they can grow to be at 20, 21, 22 years. You know what I mean? Like, in other words, it's yeah, you can sort of say, well, these guys, you know, they get older, they're in the program, whatever. But they have to have a skill level. They have to have an athleticism. They have to have a potential to grow into that player. I mean, you're still evaluating guys, and you're sort of making a projection on, okay, if they do these things, if we can work with them, we can develop this. You know, it's like Abramidis. I always use him as an example. I mean, you know, they saw what he could be, and they just let it play out and gave him a roadmap to, you know, because so much of basketball really is personal skill development, right? It's a team game, and obviously you've got a scrimmage and you've got to play, but a lot of it is just getting stronger, getting to be a better ball handler, getting to be a better shooter, you know, all those things that you can work on your own. And they find kids who are willing to put in that time and bring up their level of individual development, and then that meshes with you know, with a program and a system that's conducive to that. So I mean, you know, Farrell's a good example, right? I mean, they, you know, I mean, Jay Billis is talking about Matt Farrell as an NBA player last night. I mean,
no,
think
he
about that.
They mentioned that he's on the board, which is crazy.
I'm sorry, I missed that. I was watching the game in a bar and I didn't have any sound, so I'm sure that would have been like. But you know, the way Farrell's been playing, it's just you see that intensity, that movement. Yeah, he may not necessarily have the physical tools if you look at him to be an NBA player, but from attitudinally, the what do they call the most important muscle, the one between your ears, that one is on point for an NBA career. That kid is focused and energized and has all the want to that's going to help him get there.
And when you watch a guy, what was his name, Dellavedova, the guy for the Cavs, you know, in their championship season, and you look at what he did and his role that he played on that team, you could totally see Matt Farrell being that guy in a couple years.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
He definitely has that that level of ability. So
what's going to be interesting? What's going to be interesting is what Bonzi Colson is going to do in the league, because he's another guy where if you look at him, you don't necessarily look at a position. I mean, he's been playing in the post for Notre Dame the last couple of years. Well, now with Gebben coming into his own and Mooney starting to pick up and Burns, he can now play more of the outside and show that he has a perimeter game or he has a mid-range game. And this is going to be one of those cases where a Notre Dame player doing what he needs to do to help himself in the draft is going to actually help the team as opposed to possibly work against what's beneficial for them.
Yeah, no,
I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun. Notre Dame going into East Lansing next week, and I think that can be another. You know, this gives Notre Dame a real boost. It gives a guy like Gebben a real boost to hit those free throws. It gives a guy like, you know, Pfluger, you know, who was really always overlooked. You know, he got a couple baskets last night, but he totally shut their guy down in the second half yesterday, who had a big first half, the transfer kid with the bald spot from his name, Connor something. I can't remember his last name. So
and, you know, Ed, he's exactly the kind of guy you were just talking about, the guy where he doesn't necessarily make a statistical huge impact, but he's doing all the little things.
He really is.
That's how, like, he's shutting the guy. He's playing the defense. Yeah, he may finish with a triple single or whatever, but he's the guy who's denying their best player the ball, and that goes as far as getting to Notre Dame to a win as anything that Bonzi and Gibbs and them are doing.
And just one last thing, I mean, about last night's game, you know, what was so impressive to me was that Notre Dame beat a quality opponent, and they just did not shoot the ball at all in the first half. They had looks.
Oh, it was awful.
They didn't make anything. The second half, they did play better offensively, but what really, and I know Billis made this point, so it's not an original point, but they won the basketball game because of the way that they defended right up to the very last minute. I mean, you know, Farrell's play at the end, you know, to
that was, yeah, that was amazing.
That was amazing. And even the last play, look how good and how confident you are as a defender when, you know, there's a long inbounds play and you attack the guy. I mean, Pfluger, you know, he didn't foul him. He knocked the ball away from Wichita State's best player, or at least the best player in those 3-day tournament in Maui, that Landry kid. And you know, made a play on the ball. I mean, they play defense with so much more confidence that we're used to seeing Notre Dame teams play defense with. And they, you know, they'll take some fouls, and you know, Colson had a little bit of foul trouble, but a lot of those are just fouls of aggressiveness on defense, and that's what got them back into the basketball game. They blocked out better and they defended better. And then before you know it, they were in a position to win, and you know, Wichita State crumbled a little bit, you know, made a couple key turnovers, and there you have it. That the defensive pressure to me was really something sort of that I hadn't, that we don't see all that often out of a Notre Dame basketball team.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. Well, it's going to be a lot of fun. I am going to be there, by the way, for the game against, I think it's St. Francis, December 3rd, that Sunday. So I don't. Were you planning on going to that?
You know, I wish I could. My daughter is in a concert in Decatur the previous day, and we have a commitment on Sunday. So I gave. Wow. If you're looking for tickets. I am in a season ticket group with three other guys right at half court, across from the benches, three quarters of the way up. And a lot of times, my tickets get used more often than not, but when they're not, those guys, the other three guys live in town, so they hang on to them for me.
Gotcha. Yeah, Sutley, I think, got me some tickets, but I'll double check with them just in case. I'm sure they're not mid.
Yeah, you got them from Sully.
He doesn't like me that much, but anyways.
You're going to be working the concession stand behind gate 10.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll be able to peek in a little bit halfway through the second half, and then you can
nice.
Stand by the tunnel and watch the end of the game. Thanks, Sully.
All right. All right, good deal. We're going to leave it there, and hopefully we get a season-ending show before the bowl game that's looking at 11-2.
Yeah, let's burn down the tree on Saturday. That'd be kind of nice. We need
Indeed.
To do that.
I hear you.
Let's do that.
All right, good deal. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanic and Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.